the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz.
This morning we speak with Sarah Cookler. She's the head of sport for USA Ski-Mo, as in ski mountaineering. She'll talk about the first ever North American Ski-Mo World Cup at Solitude Resort. That's coming up December 6th and 7th. When the world's top ski mountaineers come to Utah, racing for their last chance to qualify for the 2026 Winter Games in Italy.
Then naturopathic physician Dr. Trevor Cates and Wild Women Tribe founder Renee Wong share how understanding our hormonal rhythms and supporting each other in community can bring balance, vitality, and confidence back into our lives.
These guests, when we return, you're listening to The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words. This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. For the first time ever, on December 6th and 7th, the International Ski Mountaineering World Cup is coming to North America, and it's happening right here in Utah. The Salt Lake City Ski-Mo World Cup at Solitude Mountain Resort will bring together more than 200 elite athletes from nearly 30 countries for two high-stakes days of racing in the Wasatch Mountains.
It's the final stop for competitors hoping to qualify for ski mountaineering's Olympic debut at the 2026 Winter Games in Milan Cortina. We'll explore what this milestone means for the sport, for Utah's thriving Ski-Mo community, and for the future of Olympic competition. We welcome Sarah Cookler. She's the head of sport for USA Ski-Mo and is basically putting on this event at Solitude in early December. Sarah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Okay, so right before we went on air, you talked about, so we're saying this is the first World Cup that Ski-Mo event that has ever been in Utah, or the first stop in North America, right? But you mentioned that there had been some other international federation. How does it all go?
Yeah, so I do absolutely want to give credit because ski mountaineering racing has been around in Utah for quite a while. And actually, back in, I think it was 2005, 2006, Andrew McLean and his group with Black Diamond did host a World Cup Ski-Mo race. Since then, there's been the development of the International Ski Mountaineering Federation, so an international federation. And this World Cup stop here in December this year is the first of the international federation since that new development of the entire international federation.
Okay, gotcha. Well, you know, you go to Europe and people are doing ski mountaineering all over the place. They're doing it in the daytime. They're doing it at night. It is a huge sport. So it's kind of no wonder that for the Milano Cortina Games that Ski-Mo will make its debut and that it's actually an Olympic sport now. But I'm actually surprised that Andrew McLean had put on that event way back in 2005, because it seems like it's taken a lot longer to catch on here in the States. How'd you get into it and talk about the evolution?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you go to Europe, it's so profound. I mean, it's everywhere. You get off the plane and you see pictures of ski mountaineering, and in every little village, there's people of all ages walking uphill on their skis, whether they're in spandex or whether they're just going to get a great cup of coffee up in the mountains. And we're making progress here. It's definitely growing rapidly over the past decade in North America and in the Intermountain West specifically. So it's great to see, but it's definitely a slow progression. And a lot of that, as you had mentioned, is due to access, right? Like in Europe, it's pretty accessible to walk uphill in safe environments, in bounds and in controlled environments on ski resorts. Whereas here in North America, we're slowly getting that access.
So just in case some of our listeners aren't familiar with Ski-Mo, we are, because we've spoken with some of the local little heroes who are coming up in the system. But could you explain what it is?
Sure. It's a combination really of all aspects of skiing put together. You have the endurance aspect of going uphill on skis with skins attached to your skis, which allow you to travel uphill without sliding backwards, which really allows for a great aerobic workout. And then it also allows you to take your skins off, click into your bindings, and ski downhill on exciting terrain that downhill skiers would ski on.
And how is that different from like people who hike up and telemark, for instance?
You know, it's kind of all on the same spectrum.
Similar.
Of skiing. Yeah.
Okay.
Telemark skiing, you have a free heel, so the technique on the downhill is a little bit different.
Sure.
Skimo or skimo racing, it's alpine touring, so you're actually clicking into your bindings, so you have a fixed boot on your ski, more similar to downhill skiing.
Ah, so you can use your alpine technique.
Yeah.
And there is a timed component, right? Like for racing, and That must, it just sounds so vigorous. It sounds so tiring to me. These are super athletes or all kinds of people taking part?
Oh, they're definitely super athletes. These athletes have some of the highest aerobic capacity there is, but then they also have to have the physique and the strength and the mental aptitude to race downhill quickly.
Yeah, so, you know, I have an AT set up. I have my big old heavy skis and bindings and boots. I mean, it's the same thing I use in the resort. And when I cruise around and then I click in and I start to ski downhill, it's really stable. It's beefy. But talk about the weight of the skimo gear. I mean, you click in, but you're clicking into something that feels nothing in my, you know, estimation, like an alpine ski.
Absolutely. Like any sport, when you're trying to reach the peaks of, you know, cutting weight and going fast, skimo is right there with it. And they have done everything they can in their power to reduce the weight. Because obviously going uphill, you don't want to be, you go much faster if you have lighter weight on your feet. Now the compromise is you have that lightweight gear on the downhill too. So yes, the boots at the highest level are made out of 100% carbon.
Wow.
There's typically what looks to be like a boa or a string or a plastic ratchet that has one buckle that holds your leg in place. The bindings are very minimal, with very minimal release values at the same time. And then the skis are standardized equipment for all racers. So all men race on the same size skis, 160 centimeters in length, and they're all about 62 to 65 millimeters in underfoot. And then the women, same width underfoot, but 150 centimeters in length.
Okay. So if you're looking at, say, you know, what we would consider a normal alpine ski width, and we're looking at our skate skis, is the width somewhere in between the two?
In the Wasatch, it's probably closer to your skate skis.
Wow. But they have metal edges.
They do. They've got full metal edges. They're quite stiff because these racers are racing at high speeds. And the carbon boots are also very stiff. They don't quite have that forward lean as a alpine boot would. So you have a bit more of an upright position as you're going downhill. But the weight in all of it, the whole package together, is closer to the weight of your skate skis and boots, much more so than your alpine gear.
Wow, that is so interesting. Tell us a little bit about what this upcoming event means for the Olympics coming up. Like, how many representatives could we possibly have from the United States, or some of that kind of information?
Yeah, really exciting. So this World Cup race that's going to take place at Solitude Mountain Resort on December 6th and 7th, the opening ceremonies is on the afternoon of December 5th, is going to be welcoming, at this point, we're over 20 different countries with their national teams are coming. It's an important race on multiple aspects. It's the last Olympic qualification race for the sprint and mixed relay disciplines, which are the two disciplines for the Olympics. But it's also the first race of the 25-26 World Cup season. So this race comes down to the final test of, you know, the final qualification for some countries getting an Olympic spot, and that includes the U.S. But it also is a place where some of these countries who already know they're going to the Olympics are choosing their Olympic athletes.
I see. And if we want to come to the event at Solitude, is this something we need to buy tickets for, or can you just show up, or how does that work?
You don't need tickets. You certainly, can just show up. There is an option for like a VIP ticket if you want to have front row seats and help support the event. But we really encourage everybody to just come and enjoy it. We're going to have a great vendor village. You're going to see, over 100 world-class athletes, which is really exciting. And then you also will get introduced to these short discipline skimo races and what you will see in the Olympics.
It's really pretty exciting. This sport fascinates me. I'm not so sure I want to get on those skinny skis and ski downhill, but that's the other point, is that these folks, not only do they have incredible aerobic capacity to fly up the hill, but you have to have some really advanced downhill ski expertise to be able to do it, right? Because otherwise you would not survive on that light gear.
Absolutely. So skimo racing has a bunch of different disciplines, and probably what we're most used to is the individual discipline where they're ascending all the way up the mountain and coming down. Always a marked course, but oftentimes ungroomed terrain or variable terrain. These Olympic disciplines, the descent is all on kind of a manicured course that looks a lot more like a skier cross, border cross course.
Oh.
So they actually are racing around gates, over features. There's always a jump involved. So you have to take off and land on
the skis.
There you
go, Lynn. That's the part you're looking forward to is the jump.
Right. Getting some air.
Yeah. And they're doing these descents in a heat formation. So you're going elbow to elbow with other athletes.
Wow. Okay, so there's the sprint and the mixed relay. Is that so? Mixed relay is male and female, correct? Mm-hmm. And then the sprint. So for our listeners who are familiar with Solitude, can you explain the course and kind of which event and where it is on Solitude Mountain, mm-hmm, if people are interested in coming to spectate?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're interested in coming to spectate, you'll come up Big Cottonwood to Solitude Mountain Resort to entry one. You'll see big banners advertising the event. And they're even allowing, if you're coming to spectate, we have dedicated parking spots for this. So don't let parking get you down. So it's over on the far west side of the parking of entry one, down by the Eagle lift. And then it's very spectator friendly. You'll be able to watch the entire, both events on your feet even. You don't need lift access. You can just look up and see the course. And so on Saturday is the mixed relay, and then Sunday is the sprint, and they both take place on the same hill.
Okay, how many vertical?
So it's a set amount, so it's a standardized course. So for the mixed relay course, they go uphill 70 meters, come back down and go uphill 60 meters. So we're talking like 200, 250 vertical feet. And then the sprint is just pretty much the second half of the mixed relay course. So a vertical gain of about 200 feet.
Hmm. And what has the journey been like to get skimo into the Olympics? Because I know sometimes it's quite an arduous process to get a sport into the Olympics. Has it been something that felt like a natural evolution, or did people have to really fight for it?
I wish I knew more details on that. I'm not part of the Olympic Committee or the federations. However, I think it is promising that this sport will be included in future Olympics. So this is the debut, of this sport in the Olympics. And there was always a little bit of hesitation at first because they chose to only include these very short sprint-like disciplines. And some, may be upset that it's not kind of showcasing the entire sport, the more mountaineering side of ski mountaineering. I can absolutely agree with that. However, getting the foot in the door to the Olympics has certainly brought a lot of attention and shed a lot of light onto the sport. It's also looking promising for 2030 in France, primarily because they have some of the best athletes in the world. And hopefully they will be able to add the longer disciplines as well. And then, you know, our ultimate goal, especially here, is to see this sport come back around and be held right here in Park City in 2034.
Absolutely. And just personally, what's your favorite part about the sport?
I think my favorite part about the sport, and again, in any discipline, is really how it showcases the diverse aerobic and the diverse athletic capabilities of these athletes.
Yeah, now you started into ski-mo a long time ago, and you were very competitive as well, right? I know you came from Vermont. Did you compete back there or just once you got out here?
Yeah, no, it is not something that I was aware of growing up, but I grew up, again, kind of putting all those different ski disciplines together. I grew up as a Nordic racer in northern Vermont, but I also downhill skied, and then I tele skied. And when I moved out west, I was introduced to, obviously, the great access and the bigger mountains here. And then, you know, small steps forward, but being able to put all of those different ski disciplines together is what really attracted me to it.
Yeah. And when you talk about sort of the expanded course that we may see in future Olympics, explain for our listeners who may not be familiar, all of the different things that go on with ski mountaineering that are more like mountaineering, that, you know, these things that you have to do in some of these races, it's just crazy.
Yeah, so there's definitely different aspects involved in all ski mountaineering racing. And even in these short Olympic disciplines, they try to showcase each of those techniques. So, for instance, you'll see athletes skinning on flat terrain, steep terrain, mandatory kick turns. But then there's always a boot pack section where the athletes have to put their skis on their pack and run up, hike up a steep part of the course.
Oh, my gosh.
And sometimes in the bigger races, like the big, more mountaineering races, there's even technical equipment, including like harnesses, via ferrata, and even crampons, ice axes involved.
Wow, that just sounds so intense. I'm sure our listeners are sitting with pen and paper writing down this information, but should they want to find it online somewhere, where should they go?
Thanks. So we do have an event website for the World Cup that's coming to Solitude Mountain Resort, and you can find that at www.slcskimoworldcup.com.
And SKIMO is S-K-I-M-O, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. And we should probably do a shout out to the sponsors of this event. It's pretty exciting. Town of Brighton, USA SKIMO, Relight, Dynafit, Pomoka. I don't even know some of these companies. ISMF, Silver Fork, Solitude Mountain, Black Diamond, La Sportiva. This is a lot of people coming together for this.
Yeah, so this event, and, you know, one of the big hurdles of getting a World Cup here is the financial hurdle to this. And with a sport that's not very well known, it's hard to grab sponsors to do that. So in addition to the corporate sponsors that you just listed there, we've had a lot of financial support from individuals, wow, which has been absolutely crucial to make this World Cup happen.
So this sport has caught on in a big way in Park City, maybe not fully, you know, SKIMO with the real SKIMO top of the line gear and the carbon boots and all that. But on any morning with the uphill travel at Park City Mountain, I haven't done it because I live out in the hinterland, but I hear there are several hundred people there every morning doing
several
this.
Several hundred,
yeah,
people?
Doing up in the, they come, I don't know if it starts at like 7 a.m. or something, but it's extremely popular. And I would imagine most people are coming on their AT setup or their telemark setup, but I have to believe there are a bunch of people out there clad in Lycra. And yeah, Lycra is another part of this sport that's, it's all very, very crucial. You know, who are doing it? I don't know. Have you been to Park City Mountain, Sarah?
And I have, absolutely. And you're absolutely correct. There's hordes of people that show up early in the morning or late in the evening because that's when it's accessible. And they allow an uphill path, a dedicated path. But that exactly speaks to the growth of this sport. And the growth of this sport is really only going to continue to grow with access like that because people want to go get some exercise in a safe environment quickly before work, instead of putting their headlamp on and breaking trail out in the backcountry, which is also amazing and awesome, but you need to look at the weather forecast and have a partner and really know what you're doing. Whereas people can quickly run up a groomer and feel comfortable about it.
Right, right. We're speaking with Sarah Kuchler. She's the head of sport for USA Ski-Mo, and she is heading up the first ever North American Ski-Mo World Cup at Solitude. It's taking place, well, opening ceremonies December 5th. That's a Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, you can come and watch these amazing athletes. And I get that it's only 250 vertical feet and 200 vertical feet, but that makes it much more spectator friendly while you're still really getting an understanding of what this sport is. Are there penalties or anything like that?
There are. There's all sorts of penalties.
Oh, tell us about
there
that.
Are rules. And although it's a short course, they do it multiple times. So it's a heat formation. You run a qualifying run where you get seeded into your heats, and then you either make it, quarterfinals, who moves on to the semifinals, and then the finals. So it's very exciting. It also speaks to that endurance aspect of being able to go to your full aerobic capacity for 5 minutes and then kind of sit around. Oftentimes these athletes are spinning on stationary bikes with their ski boots on.
Oh,
and then they have to
go
do it again.
Oh, goodness gracious.
This is really appealing to you, Mary Beth.
Yeah, can you tell? Can you tell? Yes. I grew up reading. and so the heat aspect fascinates me too. How many people are in a heat? Because this sounds so difficult in the first place to me, but then to be also like elbowing my way to the front of a pack, I bet my husband is dying laughing listening to me entertaining this thought. But how many folks are in a heat?
So there's six athletes in a heat. And then typically it's like the top two from each, it depends on which round you're in, but top two move on, plus what they call a lucky loser, which is the fastest time out of the other, all of the heats. So there's strategy involved. Not always do you want to be the first one, right out of the gates. Maybe you want to hang back and move forward. And then just to answer your question about penalties, there are penalties. There's all these nuances within the transition boxes. And a transition box is where an athlete goes from one technique to another. So there'll be a marked out box where they have to, per se, they're coming in up with their skis on, they have to put their poles down, rip their skins off, put their skins away, pick up their poles, click into their bindings, and take off. And they're doing that in under 10 seconds, under 6 seconds,
wow.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
But they're... if you touch your pole in the wrong way or if you step out of the box, that in itself could be a 3 to 5 second penalty, which could make it or break it.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I think the Lucky Losers needs to be the name of my next band, by the way.
I think that's a great phrase. These sports, it's like if you've never been to a World Cup biathlon at Soldier Hollow, you have to go because the penalties really make it, kind of exciting and just to know the strategy. Mm-hmm. So Ski-Mo is sounding much the same. So you said you have 20 nations coming.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the more, nuanced countries that are, I know that Azerbaijan hosts a World Cup or some event later on in the season. So that's one of the countries. What are some of these countries we wouldn't expect? Obviously, the main ones are,
sure.
France and Italy and,
Yeah, so Central Europe, obviously, is very dominant. But yes, Azerbaijan has a very strong presence. And then, believe it or not, I just got a registration from Uzbekistan.
Wow.
Yeah. China, Romania, and then mostly, obviously, Norway, Sweden, And then all of the Central Europe countries.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so which, at this point in the game of qualifying for the Olympics, which country has the most spots, or is it all the same for all the countries? Do you know this?
Yeah, it's a pretty complicated, nuanced qualification. But just a quick rundown is obviously the host nation gets an automatic bid. So Italy has one team in. However, the maximum number of teams you can enter into the Olympics is two. And so the rest of it comes down to quota spots for continental spots or standings in the World Cup. So Italy has two spots. Spain, France each have two spots. And then it goes down the list of World Cup standings and then continental spots. But this is where it gets exciting for this World Cup, this last World Cup in Utah, is there's only one quota spot allotted to North America. Actually, it's only allotted to the Americas. However, South America isn't quite really in the running right now. So that comes down to the result of Canada versus the U.S. at this World Cup, which is really too bad because everybody's really great friends and we're rooting for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's going to be whoever crosses the finish line first.
Yeah. So who are our hopefuls that we really will be cheering for?
So we've got a couple of great prospects, both on the men's side and the women's side. However, our quota spot's going to come to the mixed relay. So it's a matter of one man and one woman teaming up to get this quota spot. But certainly locally, we should all have our eyes on Griffin Briley.
Oh, great.
Griffin!
Yes, nice. We love him. He is who we interviewed after he competed in the, I think it was the Junior World Championships last year. Okay, I didn't realize that he was old enough to be competing. So,
he is, yeah.
Oh, that's
great.
Thrilling.
Griffin, and who will his female counterpart be?
So we don't know that yet. We have some national team qualification races coming up in just 2 weeks. Hopefully there's snow. That will help us choose whoever looks to be the strongest female part and the strongest male athlete to put into the World Cup. But we have a couple of strong female athletes from Colorado, and then one who is new to the team but has some great prospect out of Jackson Hole.
Great.
Wow.
Well, how fun. Sarah Kuechler, thank you so much for joining us. Everyone come out and cheer on our local boy, Griffin Briley. The mixed relay is on Saturday or Sunday?
Saturday, December 6th.
Saturday, December 6th.
Oh, but it sounds like it's going to be just so cool and so interesting to watch for anybody who goes either of the days.
Yeah.
I fully agree. So yeah, come out and watch. We'd love to have as many people there as possible.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks for driving around from Big Cottonwood Canyon this morning and not over Guardsman Pass because part of it's closed. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And stay with us. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. Hormones are a hot topic, and for good reason. They affect everything from our mood and our sleep to our energy and how we show up in the world. But instead of feeling at the mercy of our hormones or our environment, what if we learn to work with them proactively, seasonally, and with more awareness of what our bodies are telling us?
Today, we're joined by Dr. Trevor Cates. She's a naturopathic physician, best-selling author, and founder of The Spa Doctor, along with Renee Huang, the founder of Wild Women Tribe, which is a community that helps women reconnect with nature, themselves, and each other. They're joining us this morning to talk about an upcoming cohort all about our hormonal rhythms. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you. It's nice to see you.
Well, it's nice to have you. Renee, you do a lot of collaborations, it seems, with Wild Women Tribe. You're out there. You've got this network of expertise among women here in the community, and you bring them in to put on these wonderful events for women. Tell us about Tell us about the upcoming cohort.
Thank you. Yeah, I really believe that the strength of women is in collaborations and in partnerships, and that there's so much more to collaboration over competition. And so I'm so excited to partner with Trevor, who's been a dear friend of mine, one of my first friends, I'd say, since I moved here 15 years ago. And we've grown so much together, gone through lots of different life iterations. And this partnership is really about creating like a moving, living, breathing container for women who want the same thing, who want to have that feeling of support and growth and facing challenge over a span of time. You know, normally I think coaching groups can be like 2 or 3 months or something, but for us it was really important to create something that spans 12 months. And really, you know, a lot of people might think, well, that's a really long time. And yeah, it is. Lots can change during that time. And we did this for the first time last season. And it was beautiful. You know, just think of the women who you have in your life, who you connect with. Maybe you don't see them all the time, but there's a regularity. There's a depth that comes from that. There's a support. There's a reliability. And there's definitely things that you can count on in a group like that. And that's really what we wanted to create again.
That sounds exciting. Dr. Trevor Cates, you started the Spa Doctor like 20 years ago, something like that?
10 years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago. I always add years on because the years fly by. So you think, oh, it must have been 20 years ago. And you have a fairly new book out called Natural Beauty Reset. In reading your bio, I was so fascinated to read that you were the first female naturopathic physician in California, and you're not very old. So how is that possible? That's
kind of
crazy.
Maybe she's older than she looks. She's using her natural beauty.
That's right. She's really 85, but she looks like she's 30. Okay.
Well, yeah, so I used to live and practice in Santa Barbara. I've been in Park City for 17 years, but before that I was in California. And I was actively involved in the licensure effort. So California hasn't been licensed that long. I can't remember now. It's probably been a while now. But so when I first graduated from naturopathic medical school 25 years ago, it wasn't a licensed state. So I was actively involved in that. And then when the law passed to license naturopathic doctors, I was appointed by Governor Schwartz. He was governor at the time, Schwarzenegger, Arnold Schwarzenegger, to the naturopathic bureau of the advisory council. And so there were three of us appointed as naturopathic doctors, and I was the only woman. I was the first woman licensed. So that's how that happened.
That's pretty great, though. It's kind of a nice feather in your cap.
Yeah.
Well, when I heard about this upcoming event, it made so much sense to me because it feels like as women, you go through these eras of your life. You know, maybe it seems like all your friends are having babies, or, you know, now it seems like we're having a menopause moment where everyone's becoming a lot more aware and interested in the process of menopause and how the communities of women around us can really affect how we weather the ups and downs of our bodies and our cultural moments. How did you come up with this idea, and what kind of things are going to take place at this cohort?
Yeah, well, so yeah, I've been helping women with their hormones for 25 years, and I've seen so much change over the 25 years as far as what the media will cover, what women are comfortable talking about. It does seem like women are more comfortable talking about menopause now than ever before, and some of that has to do with the research and the unfolding and the truth about hormone replacement therapy and things like that. So it's making women want to talk about it more. So that's part of it, but really, you know, women go through, all, like you said, all these different transitions in our lives. So we get our periods and we oftentimes have hormonal acne. So I see a lot of girls going through that. And then we're dealing with maybe fertility issues and pregnancy, postpartum. And then we go right into perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. We don't get a break. And when I was writing my book, Natural Beauty Reset, I realized that women are more, they can be more in tune and sensitive to the changes of the seasons because of the seasonal nature of our lives. Because we go through these different transitions, because we go through cycles, literally we cycle through the month before we hit menopause. And so what I realized is that when my patients were really in tune with seasons and nature, that was really powerful. It helped them be more in tune with their bodies too. And when we're more in tune with our bodies, when we're more body aware and we pay attention, we actually pause to manage our stress, because I mean, stress hormones impact all the other hormones. It's one of the biggest factors that suppress hormones is when our cortisol is too high. It shuts everything else down because we're in fight or flight, we're in survival mode. So when we have time to take time to manage our stress, eat healthier, and especially in season, because we get more nutrients from the food, and we pay attention to these things, we go through transitions a lot easier, and our symptoms are more easier to manage. But we also can then be aware when we do have symptoms, okay, this is a sign that the body is giving us. So we don't, you know, when there's something wrong with our car, we don't wait till there's something wrong with it. We get it. The oil changed regularly. We do all the tune-ups. We don't wait for that check engine light to come on, right? We take care of our cars. We want to do that with our bodies too. And when that check engine light comes on, we want to do something about it right away and not just think, oh, it's because I'm stressed, or, oh, I'm just getting older, so this is what life is.
Well, I'm really impressed by the fact that you take care of your car before the check engine light comes on, because some folks, I'm not saying who, but some folks might be a little bit more dependent on that light. But at the same time, using the community of women around you when you have something going on, using that web almost that we have access to, that is in many ways very particular to women, can be a great support mechanism. Renee, would you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, and I think, you know, as Trevor's talking about all these changes that we go through, I think we tend to be in an era where we turn outward. We look for the expert. We go to ChatGPT. We outsource. And I think one of the really crucial things that Wild Women Tribe, what we endeavor to do, is really to bring women's knowledge and empowerment back inward, to insource, you know, to self-resource. Not to say that, you know, we're going to come up with a formula for our HRT protocol, but like really there's so much wisdom that resides within us. And when we outsource, we really bypass a lot of the natural inclinations and intuitions that we have. And so there's something so powerful about coming together with women in the community where you can use each other as sounding boards, you can share your expertise, you can say, this is what I've been going through. And you have like this circle of women. I mean, women have been circling for centuries, right? And so in many ways, this is kind of like a new take on a very, very old system that women used to naturally source through generations. And we really wanted to create that again in nature, going out in the four seasons and grounding into nature and saying, you know what, like whatever we're going through, we can do this together as a collective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I've been seeing women one-on-one and as patients for 25 years. And what I realized is also there's a really important group component. And we all know that, like that's why there's group support, therapy, and all kinds of things. But what's beautiful when women come together to talk about our health and our hormones, our transitions, that they realize they're not alone. There's so much right now where we feel isolated. We have a loneliness epidemic, right? And so when we come together and we hear each other's stories and what we're going through, we realize we're not alone, and that there's something very powerful in that. And then also there are some women that will be at a place where they can pick some others up in the group, and others will be needing some support. So it's this beautiful balance that happens that doesn't happen one-on-one. And of course, one-on-one is important too, right? I still want to see patients individually, but the group component adds this other layer of healing.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we are speaking with Renee Huang. She's the founder of Wild Women Tribe, and she's collaborating with naturopathic physician Dr. Trevor Cates, who is the founder of The Spa Doctor. Are you... So you're no longer with the spa doctor. Is that right?
That's right. I sold that company 2 years ago. Yeah.
So, but you're still seeing patients the same.
Yeah. So the spa doctor was a natural skincare and supplement company I founded, and I'm still consulting for the people who bought the company. Still great products, but now I'm focused on seeing patients. I'm mentoring other healthcare providers. And when I was talking to Renee, I was like, let's do something together. I love doing the group things, like I said.
Yeah. Okay, so this group is called Elemental Harmony. It is a 12-month series. It's hormones and seasons coaching. I love that. With the two of you. It begins soon. When does it begin?
The Saturday.
On Saturday. That's what I thought. And so is there still time for people to sign up?
Yeah, there's still time to sign up. I think we decided, you know, because it's very last minute, if you can only come for this one or you want to try it out, come and see, you know, see the group, see how you mesh with everyone. The intention is really to have the same cohort of women committed to the journey, and we meet 4 times throughout the year in person, so once every season. So we'll meet again in January, then April, and then August, and each of those different in-person meetups has a component of the season and the element and what's happening during that time. And then we have, in the interim between, we have like a check-in each month where we get on Zoom and we kind of take the temperature of the group and see what's coming up. And it was really lovely last season. Like, not everyone popped into all of those, but to have that regularity again, the familiarity, the trust, the camaraderie, it was quite beautiful.
And what, on your quarterly or on your seasonal meetings, what happens? What takes place?
Yeah, we go outside. So we were like out in snowstorms last year and wind and, you know, but there's something really beautiful. We live here, so we're all pretty accustomed to wearing the right gear to get outside. There's something so magical about being outdoors, even just for a short period where you can connect. We do guided meditation, grounding, and we really enjoy the seasonal presence of where we are. And then we go inside, and Trevor has a whole presentation that she does each quarter on a different aspect of what might be shifting, what might be changing, and the hormonal and different seasonal aspects.
And what kind of things, Trevor, do you typically bring up in this season? What is something that women should be paying extra attention to or be considering taking away or adding to their experience right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of times as women, we act like we're in the summer season all the time. We're producing, we're pushing ourselves really hard. But fall, it can be a great time to take some time for a reset, to kind of reflect, turn inward some. And so we'll be doing some of that in this fall session. And we'll also be looking at the food seasonally too. So we look at food, movement, mindset, skincare, which is what I cover in my book. And so we talk about these different elements because really when the seasons change, when the days become shorter, we have less sunlight, it impacts our hormones. It affects our thyroid hormones. It affects our cortisol, our adrenal hormones. It affects melatonin, our sleep hormone. It impacts our sex hormones like estrogen and progesterone. Mm-hmm. Even testosterone can be impacted by the seasons. And so I go through each of these seasons and explain how your hormones might be shifting and how that might be showing up for you, or how your mood might be changing because our neurotransmitters can shift too. Like serotonin is both a hormone and a neurotransmitter, and that can affect our mood, right? And wanting to kind of hibernate a little bit in the wintertime as we, so winter can be really hard for a lot of people when the days are really short, it's colder. And so fall is a great time to prepare for the winter. And then spring is also a good time to prepare for summer. So it's these great times to create these shifts in our lifestyle.
I've noticed that different people, well, my question is this across all women? Because some women love when it starts to get dark earlier because they feel like they can go inward and they can get cozy inside.
You like to nestle in.
Yes. And I am not that person. I love light. And in fact, I think when it gets dark, what I do is just go to bed at 6:30 or 7. My melatonin kicks in. And so I'm wondering about the differences between women. It's like the same with circadian rhythms, you know, the differences as you go through the seasons, what you observe.
100%. Every woman is different. And this is a beautiful thing about hormones. And it drives me crazy a little bit when I see these influencers on social media saying, well, hormones mean this, or progesterone does this, and you should take this hormone because it does this. And I'm like, well, you haven't seen patients. You haven't worked individually with women, because every woman is different. So yes, absolutely. I think that it winter is a time to slow down and reflect. So for women who don't mind that or actually love that, it can be really great. But for a lot of women I know in Park City, they're always on the go. They don't like to slow down. They always want to keep going. And so it's perfectly fine. It's just we go through these seasons of life, and it's about, how do you ride through that? How can you show up fully and not just be upset or bothered by it? So it's really individualized, and that's why it's great to talk about it in a small group, so everyone can share their differences. And some people might say, oh yeah, I'm like you, or no, I don't understand, but that's really interesting.
Yeah. Wow, it sounds great. So Elemental Harmony is the name of the group. We called it a cohort. It's a collaboration. It's women getting together. Renee, update us on what else you're doing with Wild Women Tribe.
Well, we're going into our 8th or 9th season now, which is mind-blowing to me because I feel like it just started yesterday. We have some collaborations happening in December with some artists who are doing workshops, a glassblowing workshop, and then a iPhone portraiture photography series. And so if people want to come out and do a hike and yoga and then learn some creative skills, that's what we have before the end of the year. And then you'll be so proud of me. I have the entire 2026 retreat season going. So there's 5 retreats.
Wow.
All scheduled in and around Utah, as far as Greece, Hawaii, and Mexico. And so people can check the website and actually like schedule out into the next year. I'm so proud because this has taken obviously a long time for me to be that preemptive. But there we are.
Yes, we all evolve, don't we?
We
into
do.
Into this new being, this new part of ourselves that we didn't know existed. We can schedule a year ahead.
Right. And what is your website, Renee?
Wildwomentribe.net.
Okay, easy peasy. And what? Which retreats are ones that you've done in the past and found successful and wanted to highlight again, and which might be new?
So we've done this 2-night camping retreat to Moab many, many times, sometimes twice a year. So I think this will be the 10th time that we do that. That's in the spring. It's kind of like a foot in the door starter retreat for the busy woman who has no time, right? It's only a weekend, Friday to Sunday. We're already starting to get registrations for that. And then another retreat that we did for the first time this year that was absolutely incredible was in southern Utah along the Green River through Labyrinth Canyon. Hmm. It was a 5-night camping retreat floating like 50 miles through Labyrinth Canyon. And that's actually, we just set the dates yesterday. It's going to be over the summer solstice.
Oh, wow.
So if Holy someone fun. Wants to unplug and totally reset in the most stunning natural landscape in Utah, we have that one again. And then Mexico's coming up in January. We've done that one 5 times.
Uh-huh.
The Big Island of Hawaii in March. Yes. And then we're going back to Greece in October.
I'm sure you've observed and created different kinds of bonding mechanisms that women have in order to become feeling comfortable and vulnerable in a situation. I'm hoping that many people will just go and take your retreat, but if they can't, do you have some recommendations for when you are connecting just with the other women in your life, or if you want to be proactive and have groups of people that you're sharing some stuff with that might help that process?
Yeah, absolutely. Trevor and I talk a lot about how easy it is to infuse mindfulness into your day. And I think really one of the most powerful connectors is presence. And presence doesn't have to be like an hour-long meditation class. It can be as simple as taking a couple breaths. You know, you can like sit in your car before you go into a meeting with your kids' teachers, or before you go grocery shopping, you can just take a couple breaths, or even if you're on a walk with some girlfriends or doing tea or a wine club or something, creating presence with just three simple breaths together, and then like maybe making some eye contact, you know, like that can actually shift the entire energy of a group in a room.
That's so manageable.
And anyone can do it.
Anyone can do it.
Yeah.
But also coming up Saturday, it's the first group meeting, the first reunion of Elemental Harmony with Dr. Trevor Cates and Renee Huang. So sign up today. And as you said before, if you're not ready to commit, you can come on Saturday and see if it's something you want to do. So wildwomentribe.net. Great. Trevor, Renee, wonderful to see you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.